Hey folks, I'm here with my good friend, Mr. Mark Silber. He's a photographer and the author of Advancing Your Photography. Hey, Mr. Mark Silber, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Frederick, I'm doing great, and it's good to be back with you once again.
I know, we were talking before I clicked that big red record button. We've known each other for almost a decade now, right?
I know, that's scary.
That is.
And where's your gray hair? I don't get it.
I just had it all cut off yesterday.
Okay. But
my gray hair is on the floor of the barbershop.
That's a good place to leave it.
Yeah. It's coming in fast and furious. You know, I welcome the gray hair, you know?
I dye mine. It's actually blonde naturally. And just because I want to have that distinguished look, I have to treat it every month or so.
Yeah, I love it. You know, there's probably some truth to that. You're like Julian Assange, right?
Exactly.
I love it. Well, cool. Well, thanks for coming on, man. This is going to be an interesting interview because you know more about photography, or you've probably forgotten more about photography than most people know so far. And you luckily have diligence to put it in book form for people to absorb, right?
So I had to, right?
It
was sitting in my head and it was cluttering things up, so I had to put it into a book.
You got to get it out of there, man, or else it's going to
get gotta get it out of there.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Well, Advancing Your Photography, let's talk about that. So why did you write Advancing Your Photography? Beautiful.
I couldn't help it, Frederick, because, you know, I've been producing the show Advancing Your Photography for, again, almost a decade, 9 years. Actually, we started shooting in 2007, so it's really almost 10 years. And I have figured out over 1,000 hours of interviews with really top photographers, you know, Chase Jarvis, Vincent LaFerre, Joe McNally, Bambi Cantrell, Chris Burkhard. Hey, yeah. I interviewed Chris before Instagram was even invented. Yeah. Anyway, I had all this information sitting around in my head, and I've always thought, you know, it's great to have videos, but the thing about a book, especially the size that we made it, it's a handbook that you can carry in your camera bag. Mm-hmm. And it's intended to be referred to and used. You're not going to be out in the field and go, you know, there's that video I remember Mark was talking about. Let me pull it up. You're just not going to do that. Mm-hmm. So the idea was, from my own 5 decades of photography, hard to believe.
Wow.
And having done all these interviews, I just really had to write the book.
Yeah.
My goal with it, and you know, there's lots of photography books out there, so why another one? Well, my goal with it was to put together a handbook that really covered from beginning to end the whole subject, so that you could carry one book with you instead of 12.
So it doesn't sound like it's a let me sit there with my cup of coffee and read it from cover to cover type book. This is a hey, I'm going to do a landscape, and what does Mark say about, you know, best practices for shooting this type of subject matter, right?
Well, there's two ways you can use it, and that's a good point. You could, and you should, pick it up and read it cover to cover. But let's say you are out shooting a landscape. Yeah, you open that section. What does Mark say? What are the tips for landscape photography? You can get those points and put them into use right away. Mm-hmm. So I kind of designed it with the internet in mind. How do we absorb data these days? You know, a lot of it is quick bites, put it into use. Okay, I've got what I want, now go off into something else.
Yeah.
But then there's the traditional way that you read a book cover to cover. So we kind of covered both methods. At the end of each chapter, I have what's called a crash course summary, which is a page and a half of what was in that chapter. So if you want to take your tasting spoon out from Baskin-Robbins, mm-hmm. you can get in there and get that information and go, okay, cool. You know, I see what I could do, put it into use, and then later come back, read the whole chapter to kind of flesh it all out.
I love it. Now, how was it writing this? Like the process of writing, especially in this day and age of attention deficit disorder, sitting down to write a book and having the patience it to sit down and actually put words to paper in long form.
Yeah.
It seems like a lost art in many ways in this era of 140 characters. How'd you do that?
Dashing things out and, yeah. and things that disappear, you know, blog posts and tweets and Facebook posts, they disappear. They evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what, the biggest and most important thing for me was having a deadline.
Yeah.
You know, I it was only a year ago I got the publishing contract for this book last summer, and then they wanted the manuscript by Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Because we wanted to publish in March. So, you know, that's pretty heroic to
yeah.
go from August, let's say, I think is when I actually started, to a complete manuscript. I mean, that means fully edited, all you know, corrections made, every change made, and that sort of thing. So that made me just really have to focus every single day and make sure I completed a certain number of words. I basically went for 1,000 to 1,500 words a day and kept myself on that schedule. It actually works if you do it that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, like they say, how do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time?
I guess so.
Some people
You've
say
eaten a
that.
Lot of, I don't eat a lot of elephants, so
yeah,
I don't
neither
know.
Neither do I. I don't know. I find it a little gamey. I don't know. So let's talk about the book itself. There's a like you said, I mean, you spend a lot of time on this. It's chock full of information for photographers. There's some key chapters in here that I wanted to focus in on and have you kind of expand on. One of them is the like in chapter, I think it's chapter one. Is it chapter one? Or the first thing that I want to talk about is the skill of visualization.
Yeah, that's right. Actually chapter two,
that is
but
chapter
I do
two.
Mention it in chapter one.
Yeah, yeah, the skill of visualization, because I find even when I do and I lead photo walks, that's one of that's a fundamental thing that seems to be missing from people's sort of, you know, quiver right. of skills is, okay, pre-visualize what I want to shoot versus I have this amazing camera that I just bought yesterday at Best Buy. Now I'm going to go, you know, put it in a unique situation. It's going to make me some images, right?
I'm going to press that shutter until it takes a picture that looks really good.
Exactly.
Well,
autofocus,
you know that,
auto exposure, I can't lose.
it's the camera taking the pictures, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Not the person.
Exactly. Just like it's the oven making the gourmet meal, not the chef.
There you go. So there you go. That's a common misconception right there. So Bambi Cantrell said it beautifully. People take pictures, not cameras.
Mm.
So what I noticed, I sifted through all these interviews that I did, and almost one for one, every one of these guys that I interviewed and gals mentioned something about pre-visualization or visualizing the image before they took it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you hear that enough times. I already knew the concept, but you hear it enough times from others that you have to stop and think, well, if the pros are doing this, there must be really something to this.
Okay.
And Frederick, there's a dividing line. Snapshot is this. Pressing, I'm not really thinking about anything. I'm just, oh, that's cool, the sunset. Press, mm-hmm. There's a dog, cool. There's a kitty cat, you know. That's a snapshot. A photograph is taken with a vision of what you want to capture. So I'm out on a shoot, and I'm going to put myself in the best location, which is part of visualization. Chris Burkhart said, you know, when he was out shooting, I asked him what went into shooting a cover. And he said, well, I would see 30 guys standing in one location. I'd stand somewhere else. I'd stand higher or lower or off to the side because I don't want to compete. They're all going to turn in those same 30 photographs, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I want to visualize myself in a different location. That's part of visualization.
Yeah, yeah.
It's getting in your mind what you want to accomplish before you bring the camera into the story. The camera is a tool and an instrument that you use to capture that story.
And to continue the cooking analogy, it's kind of like, you know what? I'm going to make a meal. And you go stand in the kitchen.
I'm going to throw a lot of things in a hot pan. And
now, granted, some people can do that. My mom could go in the kitchen and the refrigerator would, you know, not have what you would think is necessary to make a meal and come out with a fantastic meal. Some people can do that. But most of us mortals can't necessarily, you know, be alchemists and create stuff from nothing, right? You got to, like, go in with a recipe or at least a sketch of a plan. Like, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to, you know I'm going to San Francisco next week. And what do I want to do when I'm there? Even if it's that high level, right? You're like, instead of just dropping yourself in the city and saying, okay, let's go out and shoot pictures. You can say, I want to get Lombard Street. I want to get the Golden Gate Bridge. And I want a shot of Coit Tower.
That's right.
You know,
well, I make that point in the book. Like, when you go on vacation, make a shot list. I'm going to go to Paris. Everybody shoots the Eiffel Tower. I've got to take a picture of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eiffel Tower, but I want to capture it in some unique way. So that's my shot list.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Paris and I had very specific photographs I wanted to come back with.
Yeah.
One of them was a Citroën Deux-Chevaux. Those are the, you know, those really funny looking round cars. Mm-hmm. Deux-Chevaux means two-cylinder. It's a two-cylinder car that looks kind of like a VW in its own weird way.
Like with edges on it, right? Like,
yeah, it's very rounded, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the classic color is red. And so I wanted a picture of a Deux-Chevaux, and I captured a number of them. And the one that I liked the best was I dragged the shutter so it was you could see all the motion,
mm-hmm.
and you could see the red of the Deux-Chevaux. And then I used a mask in Photoshop to make the rest of it black and white.
Yeah.
But you come away. You should do that on a excursion, travel, whatever, make a list. That's what pros do. You know, if you're on an assignment for National Geographic, you can guarantee you're not just winging it and going, well, I hope I capture this guy skydiving off cliff jumping or whatever it is. You know exactly the kinds of images you want, and you come away with those because you have to deliver the goods.
But okay, so let me play devil's advocate for a second. And I know, I believe this is in the book as well, so you're ready for this.
I'm ready.
Having a plan or even a semblance of a plan, no one can argue that that's a good strategy, you know, when you go into any situation, photography or otherwise. However, isn't there something to be said about spontaneity? You know,
I'm glad you brought that up.
How is that for a T-ball, right?
Thank you. Because that's the most – here's this sort of feeling of, if I pre-visualize or I visualize everything, I'm not going to be spontaneous. Mm-hmm. Let me argue against that. Henri Cartier-Bresson, who is probably the master of spontaneous photography, you know, street photography, capturing the moment.
Decisive moment.
He pre-visualized. He visualized. Even if it was a split second, he knew that if he stood in this location and saw that guy jumping over the mud puddle, remember that famous photo?
Yeah.
He's straddling this perfect shot. He has not touched down. The feet are still in the air over the mud puddle. But I guarantee you, Cartier-Bresson knew where he had to stand to press the shutter, and he had to anticipate when to press it, because if he waited, the guy would be hitting the mud puddle.
Yeah.
So even spontaneous photography, going back to the kitchen analogy, your mom,
mm-hmm.
it may look like she's just winging it, but I guarantee if we crawled inside her head, she's sifting through. She knows that buttermilk is not going to mix with cabbage.
Yeah.
So she goes, no, we're not going to use those two ingredients together.
Right.
But cabbage and carrots and raisins, that's a good mix.
Yeah.
So she's doing it very rapidly, but she's still doing that kind of visualization. How is this going to look at the end of the meal here?
Yeah. Or like timing, right? Like when I'm cooking breakfast this morning, it was, it's just bacon and eggs, right? So, but you know, maybe I should cook the bacon first. And then the eggs, serve them together, because it would, doing it in reverse is, the eggs are going to get cold, et cetera, right?
Exactly.
So it's timing and planning. Yeah, no, that's a great point.
It all boils down to basically using the most valuable instrument that we have, which isn't the camera. Cameras come and go.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. the most valuable instrument we have, the most powerful computer, look at how, the size of it and the portability of it, and how much data it can collect. Use that, hone that skill, because that will lead to not only a better photograph, but a better process print, and even how you share it with others, which is we can talk about in a minute.
Yeah, yeah, that's the last mile of it is the sharing piece of it. But what before we get into that, before we run out of time, I want to talk about gear itself, because a lot of people get stuck in the quicksand of gear. And we talked about this a little bit before we started the recording, but the idea that I need specific gear, or I can't be a good photographer unless I'm shooting with Mark Silber's Hasselblad that you have peeking in the corner right there, right? You know, or using that as a crutch, like, hey, you know, I'd be good too, but I can't afford that Hasselblad that Mark has, therefore I can't, you know, take good photos. Right? What do you say to that?
Nix that, get that out of your mind, because the truth is, you hand a plastic camera to a great photographer like Chase Jarvis, and he'll come back with good pictures, and has, and he's proved it. Mm-hmm. You know, look at, you know, this. iPhones are becoming probably the most prevalent, and smartphones in general, the most prevalent camera on the planet, without a doubt.
No question. Yeah.
I mean, by leaps and bounds, the stats are just unbelievable.
And that's today in 2017. You know, if you're watching this in 2018, 2019, the picture, you know, no pun intended, is going to be completely different.
It's going to just keep going in this rocket ride.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this is a very limited device. You know, I can't really adjust depth of field. I mean, it has the depth of field effect in here, but it's very limited.
Yeah. You're limited by physics with those devices.
So, okay, but could you come away with great photographs and do people all the time? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Take this camera. Now, here's something to remember. In film photography, this is the other thing I think that clutters up modern photography, is that with the digital age, we have numerous menus, 10,000 things that you can adjust, right? Mm-hmm. Gets in the way of your photography, because truthfully, what do we have on a standard film camera? How many points can you adjust?
Three.
That's right. You've got focus, aperture.
Or four. Yeah.
Shutter.
Yeah. Well, ISO with your film selection.
However, most cameras, you just put in whatever you've got, and then you're stuck with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the Hasi does have a back that comes apart, so I could switch it, and I could say, I'm gonna move from black and white to color. But most film cameras, you don't do that, so even that's eliminated from the story. So you have three main controls.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, those three main controls follow through to today's camera phones as well. I mean, you basically have, it's physics, right? You can't bend space and time. You're just manipulating the ways we capture. However, with these new, you know, high-tech supercomputer phones that we have, they have, you know, software and algorithms in there that do things once those photons are captured, you know, really quickly to make you feel like, oh, you know, I'm really good. Like blur the background and do those sorts of things.
Yeah, they can do all those cool things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but they start with the same, you know, f-stop, ISO, shutter speed, and focus, right?
Yeah.
It's all the same.
So, you know, one of the things I did in the book is I took apart what are the controls of a camera and clearly defined each one of them so that they're there right in front of you. Because you have to know those controls. You have to know, and again, going back to the kitchen analogy, if you watched a great chef, you'd find they use the same set of tools over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, they're using a knife. They're using a pan, they're using a spatula. Yeah, they have 10,000 other things in their kitchen, but they're rarely used compared to those main tools.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the way photography is too.
And that's a really, really good point. Just to master the basics.
You know, mastering.
Master the basics, and the rest will come as you develop your own personal style. And using that kitchen analogy, you have a need to reach for that specialty pan or this special kind of knife or whatever. That's going to be an outlier. But if you master the basics and understand the chemistry of how this stuff is going, in the case of photography, the physics of light, Exactly. You understand the physics of light intrinsically, like this is what light is doing when it goes into my lens, and this is what I'm, this is how I'm manipulating it with these different controls on the camera. Then you can start to break the rules and do all kinds of crazy stuff, right?
Once you've mastered that, absolutely right. Once you've mastered those basics, you can start bending the rules and using them the way you want. Well, by the way, that's a good point. The rules, what rules are there really? Are there laws in photography? You're going to get a ticket if you don't follow the rule of thirds.
Right, right.
Absolutely not. It's a guideline. Use it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, throw it out. Because how many photographs have been taken with the subject dead center that look great?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
They don't always have to be, you know, in a perfect rule of thirds. But you know what? A lot of times it works. So you got to know those rules in order to, as you said, bend them or be flexible with them.
Yeah, they're suggestions. I mean, the only rules in photography or anything in this particular universe are the rules of physics, right? Those so far,
yeah, don't drop your camera.
We haven't found a way to speed up light or slow it down, relatively speaking. You know, we can't do that.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, we're working on it.
I've got an app that's in design to change those laws of physics.
That sounds like another interview.
Yeah, that's another interview.
Well, let's close this off with some tips from Mark Silber, who's been shooting for a couple of weeks at least.
At least a few weeks.
At least a few weeks.
I still am beginning. I'm like Jeff Bezos. It's always day one here in my studio.
No, I hear it. Richest man in the world now, by the way, as of last week.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well.
Yep.
I guess if you can just reach into your pocket and buy Whole Foods, you must have some extra change in there.
Newspapers, grocery store chains, whatever you want, you know. So.
Wow, amazing. Well, I'll tell you what. You want me to just throw out some?
Yeah,
some
just freeform it. Go for it.
You know, here's one that I like, and that is shooting landscapes. If you think about it, what makes a landscape photograph really interesting? Mm-hmm. It's the weather. You know, going out on a blue sky, sunny day, taking a picture of the coastline or a mountaintop or whatever, may not be that interesting. But if you add the element of weather into it, all of a sudden, a cloud, a big thunder cloud or a big puffy cumulus cloud, it adds dimension and a layer that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah.
So look at the weather. There's even apps that will tell you what the weather's doing. Look at the weather and, hey, if I go out like today, I look, there's some puffy little clouds, not terrific. Mm-hmm. But you know what? If I keep my eye out, which I do all the time, when I start seeing those big storm clouds, get your camera and go out.
Yeah, I love it. Let me ask a question on that.
Sure.
So basically what you're saying is on these beautiful, sunny, blue sky California days like we have today and almost every day, people say, wow, was that a great day to go out and shoot photos? Not necessarily, right?
Probably not. I mean, you know, look around at great photographs and you'll often see they were shot when there was some kind of weather activity going on. And of course, the golden hours.
Yeah.
Always take advantage. It's a half an hour before sunset, half an hour after sunset. And same thing with sunrise. There's also an app for that will remind you. I've got it on my phone.
Send me a link to that, and we'll put it in the notes for this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool because it actually adjusts to where you're located, and it obviously adjusts to the time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we go later and later in the year, that golden hour is going to be coming earlier and earlier in the day.
Sure.
Angles. Use angles. I have a whole section on use of angles. You know, this is another big mistake. The camera and the photographer are just at eye level.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rule that says you have to do that.
Yeah.
You can look down low. You know, if you're taking a sports photograph and you want to accentuate the action, get down low.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're going to all of a sudden see that guy who's diving off the diving board. It's going to look like, whoa, there's a lot of motion.
Yeah.
If, on the other hand, you shoot it high, it's going to slow down the motion.
Interesting. Yeah.
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 But don't be afraid to explore different angles. Get up on a ladder. Crouch down low. There's a story of Annie Leibovitz shooting Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he's skiing, and she wanted to get this kind of, like, big, bold perspective.
Mm-hmm.
They actually dug out a pit for her to crouched down in with mm-hmm. her camera. Mm-hmm. So she really got this upward looking shot of Arnold, and
yeah,
it worked.
That's great. You know, and what I tell people is that's exactly spot on. But I tell people that, you know, as humans, the majority of adult humans fall between somewhere between 4'5" and 7' tall, right? Somewhere in that range,
yeah,
which means a limited perspective for all of us for the most part. If you go outside of that, instantly your photo is more interesting than what they would normally see, right?
That's right. Because, yeah, if you're shooting at eye level where everybody's already looking, it doesn't stand out.
Yeah.
By the way, a tip on that, Bob Holmes, who's a phenomenal travel photographer, when you dress for your shoot, wear clothes you don't mind laying on the ground.
Yeah.
Or climbing up a dusty area.
Yep.
So you won't have any concern about that, because your best friends are your feet.
Yeah.
Remember that.
Yeah.
You can zoom with your feet. You can move up and down a ladder. You can go to the side. You can crouch down. But your feet and your body have to be doing the work.
Love it. Love it. All right. Give us one more. Give us one more.
Well, you know what? I'm going to give you the biggest tip that I could possibly encompass all this in. Get my book. And this isn't just an advertisement. The reason why I wrote this book is so you would have at your fingertips a reference point. So you're out and you're shooting a wedding. You know, whether you're the wedding photographer or you're just a family member, there's key things you need to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is, get all the shots that you need, the required shots. Do not leave out the great aunt, you know, that everybody loves, and all of a sudden there's a missing photograph of her that's not going to be popular.
Yeah.
Get your required shots, but then also get those spontaneous shots that nobody was thinking about.
Yeah.
And that's true, again, whether you're talking about a wedding, an event, or a travel. Capture what you really want to bring home with you, but also go after those spontaneous moments as well.
I love that. That's perfect. That reminds me, you may or may not remember this based on your experience in the dark room, but do you remember the concept of the ring around?
Tell me.
So the ring around, when you're creating, you're in the dark rooms, particularly color printing, because it's so hard to nail color and it's so subjective.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could think you got it right and you look at it a day later, it's magenta, you know.
Totally.
So they have this whole concept of the ring around, where you have what you think is the best image or the best exposure in the middle. And then around it, you do a bunch of variants on that, and then you go examine it and find if one of the variants beats the master one, then you replace the master one with the variant and repeat the process until you nail it down to this is as good as it's going to get. I say the same thing for when people are shooting. Basically,
yes,
what you said, you make sure you nail the subject that you want to get, and then you shoot around that.
Totally.
You
That's
serendipity
really
to shoot
good
around
advice.
It. Because sometimes one of those around shots is going to end up being better than the main shot that you shot. But at least you'll have the peace of mind of, hey, I nailed it. I got my insurance done. Now I can play. You're right.
Frederick, that's going to go in volume 2 of Advancing Your Photography. That's a good one. I like that. Because, yeah, you don't know until you get back to the studio and really look at it on your big monitor. Sometimes mm-hmm. those other shots that maybe you consider throwaway shots are really the ones that hit it right on the head. That's a very good tip. Thank you.
And it goes back, it all works together. It goes back to what you were saying in the beginning, which is also a very good tip of pre-visualization and having the idea of what you want to shoot before you actually arrive on the scene or pull out your camera. You kind of have it in the back of your mind what you want to shoot.
That's right. What
you want to shoot in mind, nailing that, and then, you know, doing your serendipitous ring around that is, you know, you'll feel good at the end of the day that you actually covered this thing and might have some shots that you didn't even think that you'd be getting today, right?
Yep. And one last thing to remember.
Yeah.
The final stage of photography is sharing it with others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is an area that I think we could all use improvement with, because with computers, you can store a million images, but you've got to get them out in the world and let other people see them. This is why I really am a proponent of take your best photographs, get them printed and frame them, put them on your wall, you know, display them. look at different ways that you can share your work so it isn't just in your head. It's kind of funny, isn't it? Because it starts off with visualization in your own mind, but it's really got to finish up by sharing it with somebody else. Yeah. Otherwise, you feel unsatisfied.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was talking to another photographer the other day, and she was talking about, and I actually use this phrase in my talks as well, begin with the end in mind. And
absolutely.
Yeah, which goes to what you were saying about pre-visualization, but I was also thinking of it from the standpoint, or she was saying from the standpoint of, you know, shoot with where this thing is going to be going in mind.
Totally.
Like, I know that I want a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge at golden hour or blue hour or whatever above my fireplace. It's going to be this big, horizontal, yada, yada, yada.
Completely.
And you know that's a hole that you need to fill, and you go out and capture that, and it changes your whole mindset rather than just being spray and pray and serendipity and luck and all that stuff. You know that I'm shooting this thing. I'm on my tripod. I'm shooting this thing. It's going to go above my fireplace. I'm going to be looking at it for the next year, right?
You're photographing with a purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what happens when you're on assignment. You have to come back with those exact shots that the magazine wants, let's say.
Yeah.
But you should treat yourself like the client in that case.
I love it.
Okay, dude, come back with that killer image of the Golden Gate Bridge above my fireplace.
Yeah, or there's going to be hell to pay. I love
That's
it.
Right.
See, you and I could talk for hours. We need to do another interview, man.
Absolutely.
We have to do another. So tell me, where can people go connect with you? Where can they go to pick up this book? What's the deal?
The book is on Amazon. So that's probably the easiest way. It's also available at many other stores, including B&H. So if you go to B&H, you'll find it in there. you can go to my site and get a link. So I'm sure you're going to display my links everywhere.
I will. Yep.
I want to mention one other thing. A really cool feature of this book is I have a resource page that I've created, which basically follows the book by chapter and page. And for instance, I mentioned a number of different photographers who I've interviewed. Well, I have those interviews in that resource page. So let's say you read something about Joe McNally and you think, gosh, I'd like to see what else Mark did with him. You can actually watch the video and just follow right along with that resource page. So that Golden Hour app that I mentioned, that's in there. So you say, hey, that's kind of cool. So you go from the printed page to digital and to the web, and it kind of links these things together. There's also some cool offers in there, like I mentioned getting your photos printed. Well, we work with Bay Photo Lab. There's a discount in there. Our friends at Think Tank, who I use their bags all the time, go in there and they'll give you a free goodie, you know. So we kind of put as many of those cool little resources and goodies as we can in there as well.
Love it. Love it. Mark Silber, thanks for coming on the show, man. I love it.
Frederick, once again, I hope it isn't another 10 years.
It better
I'm going to be.
Be
watching that hair. I'll tell you what, if it's still that color in 10 years, I'm going to know the secret.
Yeah, Walgreens, right?
Exactly.
The secret is just chop it all off, you know, and be done with it.
That is one way to do it, for sure.
Just get rid of it. Get rid of it. It's a nuisance anyway. Too much maintenance.
I got it.
All right, Mark. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
See you later.